Hi, this is Maria Olson. You may know me from Trophy Heads or Starry Eyes and maybe Paranormal Activity 3. And I want to welcome you to Anthony T's Horror Show because it's an awesome show.
Hi, my name is Jessica Cameron and you're listening to Anthony T's Horror Show.
Hey, fellow horror fans. This is Troy Escamilla, the director of Party Night and Mrs. Claus. And you are listening to Anthony T's Horror Show. Enjoy.
Welcome to another edition of Anthony T's Horror Show. I'm Anthony T. In this edition, I have two interviews. First, I will be bringing back Todd Stargrush to the podcast as he has an event that he's organizing coming up on December 4th called the 6th Annual Toy Drive and Scares That Care Fundraiser, which will be taking place online on the Horror Nerds YouTube channel. I do mention in the interview it's December 6th. It's December 4th, not December 6th. So if you hear me say December 6th, that's a mistake I made. Because the event will be taking place December 4th on the Horror Nerds YouTube channel. And after that interview, I will be talking to the president and founder of Fright Rags, Benjamin Scrivens, as we'll talk about Fright Rags as a company. It's a very good interview. Definitely check that out. And then in What's Anthony T Watching, yours truly will be reviewing a Thanksgiving slasher. Since Thanksgiving is pretty much a day or two away when this episode drops, I figured I'll talk about a new Thanksgiving slasher film. But before all that, the news. Now, I could start with something I'm so excited about, or I can start with a couple of news items which really I can't figure out why it's happening this way. I really cannot, seriously. Well, I start with the good news first. Now, normally, I will not talk about television horror series on this podcast, because I like to keep it to the film genre and everything, but this is a news item which I'm so excited about. It is probably one of my favorite horror shows at the moment. I'm talking about Netflix Stranger Things. Now, if you have not seen Stranger Things, I don't know what rock you've been living under. This is literally a great series that's been on for 3 seasons over on Netflix. It's definitely worth checking out. If you love 80s nostalgia and horror, this is a great show. But this piece of news is what makes me very excited for season 4 of Stranger Things. Not that I'm already excited for season 4 of Stranger Things, but this is just the icing on the cake. None other than horror icon Robert England will be appearing in Stranger Things Season 4. Now, Stranger Things has been bringing back some 80s icons across the three previous seasons, as there's been such 80s icons as Matthew Modine, Paul Reiser, Sheen Astin, Carrie Ells, but this is definitely my favorite 80s icon coming to that show. And I quite frankly am shocked that this is happening. That Robert England is going to be on quite possibly one of the best horror series going right now, whether it's on television or on streaming. I really cannot wait for Robert Englund to be on Stranger Things Season 4. He's going to play a disturbed man that is imprisoned in a psych hospital for a gruesome murder that his character committed in the 1950s. It is great to see Robert Englund in a major project again. It's been a while since he's been in something major on the scope of Stranger Things. Because I love seeing Robert Englund in anything he does. He's always very good. But I'm very happy that he's finally getting a recurring character on a major TV show, which is very exciting. And I cannot wait for Stranger Things Season 4, as this looks like it's going to be better than Season 3, which is also a great season. Now, file this under WTF. Now, recently we had news that Scream 5 finished production, and the filmmakers have announced the official title for Scream 5. The official title of Scream 5 is Scream? Scream? Are you kidding me? Seriously, I don't know who came up with the idea to title Scream 5
Scream.
I don't get it. Scream? This is not a reboot or a retcon. This is a sequel to Scream 4. And you're going to title Scream 5 just Scream? Isn't there a movie already in the series titled Scream? Seriously, I don't get this title. I really don't. Hey, this title Scream 5 Scream. It's like titling Friday the 13th Part 5 just Friday the 13th. Or A Nightmare on Elm Street 5. A Nightmare on Elm Street. I don't get this. Seriously. This is a dumb idea for a title. I don't get titling your fifth film in your franchise the same title as the first film in your franchise. It is not rebooting anything. Hello, everybody. Making Scream 5? You do not title Scream 5 Scream. Seriously. I don't get it. How can Kevin Williamson, who's executive producer of this film, can be totally, completely fine with that? It's like, what are you trying to do? Are you trying to sell a movie with the same characters from the first film to a new audience? Because us hardcore horror fans know that Scream 2022 is actually Scream 5. I don't get why the writers in this film had the need just to call this film Scream. It's not a retcon. It's a sequel to Scream 4. I don't get it. We horror fans know that Scream 2022 is Scream 5. And guess when this film is coming out, since it's already done filming. Scream will be coming out January 14th, 2022. Meaning this film is going to sit in a vault for over a year. I don't know how long it's going to take to do post-production on this film, because I don't see any complicated effects needed for this film to warrant the release date of January 14th, 2022. Literally. Seriously. I know there's a logjam in the release schedule because everything's getting pushed back to who knows when, because we still haven't had A Quiet Place 2. We haven't had Candyman. We haven't had Halloween Kills released yet. January 14th, 2022? And production is over? Well, if things don't go well in the editing process, they'll have a lot of time to fix this film because it's just going to sit there for over a year. This better be a good film because there is no excuse for this film to suck if it has to sit for over a year. I'm sorry, but if you're a major studio and you've done production on a film that you're not going to release until early 2022, this better be a good film. I'm serious. If this is not a good film, I don't know what I'm going to do. Seriously. Because they have all this time to make a very good film. Now, will they use it? That's another story. I've got some more news to go over, including, yes, another Predator film. I guess they didn't get the message after the Predator bombed big time. Talk more about it on the other side.
Welcome to Dark Discussions, your place for the discussion of horror film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. A weekly podcast where the discussion is about the most recent horror and genre films. Intelligent talk on a genre that deserves intelligence. A conversation between co-hosts discussing not only the film, but also the connotation that the directors and screenwriters are trying to articulate. If you want more than a review, listen to Dark Discussions.
And speaking of perception, there's just one more scene I want to talk about, which is after Caleb discovers that Kyoto's a robot, Kyoto kind of peels off her skin, showing him what's underneath.
Now, wait a minute. I know where you're going with this, but tell me you weren't already thinking this 15 minutes earlier in the film. Exactly what he's thinking at that moment.
Which is he's a robot, too.
Oh, I considered the possibility.
Right, and that's what I like, is the fact that the writers were smart enough to know that this is what the audience would be thinking.
We've all seen Blade Runner.
Right. Exactly.
www.darkdiscussions.com, wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome back. I know you're waiting for my thoughts on Predator 5. But first, I have a couple of news items that I have to get off my chest. And it involves a couple of indie horror films that will be coming out next year. Recently, it was announced that RLJ Entertainment and Shudder has acquired Neil Marshall's latest film, The Reckoning. Now, why do I bring up Neil Marshall? Because the last film I saw from Neil Marshall was atrocious. Yeah, I'm talking about Hellboy. That film was atrociously bad. But hey, I still like Neil Marshall. And I think there was a lot of things going wrong during the production of that film. Because of all the behind-the-scenes drama that was reported about that film. So, this looks interesting. Because it seems to be a return to form more like The Descent and Dog Soldiers in the type of film that Neil Marshall is doing. It's going to be a period piece that takes place in the 17th century England. The film stars Charlotte Kirk, Joe Anderson, and Sheen Petrie. I'm hoping it's a return to form for Neil Marshall. Because I like Neil Marshall's work. Don't get me wrong. I think he's a very talented director. It's just that that film Hellboy was a complete mess. And I'm really hoping that The Reckoning is going to be a good film. And a film that I'm looking forward to in 2021. Another film that I'm looking forward to in 2021 is The Stylist. The film is based on the short film of the same name. If you have not seen the short film, go to YouTube and type in The Stylist short film. It is a very haunting short film. I'm very happy that Arrow Video has acquired the feature film rights to The Stylist. So that means we will be seeing that released in 2021 as well. It's the first feature film from Jill Gavazigan. If I pronounce it wrong, I apologize. That's just a hard last name to pronounce. I'm very happy that this feature film is going to be released next year. Arrow Video is a great label. They've done some good work with some of their original films as well. As you look at one of their latest releases, The Deeper You Dig, that's pretty much like a two-disc set, because it gives you two movies, plus it has some really interesting special features on the Blu-ray, so I can't wait to see what they do with this film, quite frankly. The film's starring Brie Grant and Najara Townsend, who's reprising her role from the short film. I really cannot wait for this film. This would probably be up there as one of the most anticipated horror films of 2021 if it wasn't for the fact that we still have Halloween Kills to be released, A Quiet Place 2 to be released, Candyman to be released, Terrifier 2 to be released. 2021 is going to be loaded with horror films, both from the major studios and the independent horror scene. I really think 2021 is going to be a really big year for horror. Everything is lining up for it to be a major year. Only time will tell. Now we can get to the Predator 5 rant. Now, I really did not want to see another Predator film made after the disastrous The Predator that was released a couple years ago. I literally was hoping that The Predator would just go away. The whole franchise. Let it sit there for like 10 years or so, then reboot it. Because The Predator was such a disastrous film. I don't see too many people liking this film. It was just flat out awful. But they're gonna make Predator 5. Why not? Why not try again? After The Predator literally killed the franchise. Because let's face it, Fred Dekker, as much as I love his films, The Monster Squad and Night of the Creeps, he has killed both the RoboCop franchise and, in my mind, the Predator franchise. I don't see how the Predator franchise is going to be resurrected after that abomination of a film. But 20th Century Studios is going to try again and make another Predator film. At least this time, there's somebody competent in the room, as they have hired director Dan Trachtenberg to direct this film. He is mostly well known for the excellent 10 Cloverfield Lane. I really hope that it goes back to the tone of Predator, Predator 2, and Predators. Because if it's like the tone of the Predator, it's going to feel yet again. I'll probably go see it in theaters. Seriously. Because I like the Predator franchise. But I really do not want Fred Dekker or Shane Black near this film. And from all accounts, it looks like they will not be near this film. So that's good. As they've tapped Patrick Aison to write the screenplay for this film. I just want a good Predator film. I just want something better than The Predator. Hopefully, Predator 5 will be better than The Predator. The only question now is, do people even care about The Predator franchise after the debacle of The Predator? Just saying. Because that film looked like a franchise-killing film. But we'll wait to see how Predator 5 turns out. And with that, that's the news. Every day, there's a family struggling with hospital bills to care for their sick child who is fighting an illness. There's a woman who is fighting breast cancer and is having trouble making ends meet while paying for their treatment. And there are burn victims that are going through treatments to heal their deep wounds. There is a charity in the horror community that helps these people. Scares That Care is an organization that helps families deal with the bills for their child. They help women get the treatment they need to fight breast cancer. And they help people who are dealing with severe burns get the help they need to heal. Scares That Care is a 100% volunteer organization and 501c3 nonprofit charity that is dedicated to helping these people in fighting real monsters. To find out more information or to donate to Scares That Care, you can go to www.scaresthatcare.org. Every donation helps Scares That Care fight real monsters.
Hey guys, this is Steve and Christina. I'm the founder, owner, creator, and host of Super Retro Throwback Reviews. Are you looking for the best movie reviews, music reviews, video game reviews, and Comic-Con coverage all around? Well then look no further. Definitely check out Super Retro Throwback Reviews on YouTube and our new audio podcast, the new and improved Super Retro Throwback Reviews audio files version 2.0 on the following media distributors: Podbean, Google Play, Stitcher, SoundCloud, iTunes, and Spotify.
Class is over, John! Time for something new and improved!
Welcome back to Anthony T's Horror Show. I'm here with the producer of the Theater of Terror in Return of the Theater of Terror. He's also the New Jersey State Rep for Scares That Care. He is here to talk about his upcoming event, the 6th Annual Toy Drive and Fundraiser, which will be taking place on December 6th on the Horror Nerds YouTube channel. I'd like to welcome Todd Stadush back to the show. How are you doing today?
Good, Anthony. Thanks so much for having me back on. Appreciate it.
What made you become a fan of the horror genre?
Well, wow. So it started when I was just a kid. I was like 7 or 8, and my mother would never let me watch anything that she thought was scary. But I had a favorite aunt that when I would go to stay at my aunt and uncle's house, my aunt would let me stay up late with her and watch horror movies. Nothing too crazy back then. This is, you know, 40 something years ago. But she would let me watch, you know, Universal horror movies and stuff and stuff like that. And I just got hooked on it. And then that was that. And I just loved horror ever since. I love the fact that with horror films, basically anything goes, you know? There are very few limits when it comes to horror movies, and I just like that aspect of it.
What are some of your favorite horror films?
Oh, boy, we could talk for hours and hours just about that. I'm a big fan of Italian horror, Cannibal Holocaust, Giallo films, you know, Lucio Fulci, Dario Argento. I'm a huge fan of that. I'm also a huge fan of British horror. One of the films that really kickstarted my love of horror and my love of horror anthologies is an old British film called Dr. Terror's House of Horrors with Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee. Is a fantastic film. And then, you know, I'm also a big fan of all the, you know, iconic films. The Exorcist is one of my top 10 favorite movies, horror or otherwise. And being an 80s kid, you know, I grew up on Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street. I have a great love of 80s horror. But I also love a lot of current, you know, modern horror as well. I loved Midsommar. I loved Hereditary. I loved Get Out and Us. Like I said, we could talk for hours and hours and hours about my favorite horror films.
I probably could do the same, too.
I'm sure.
I noticed you also have a blog site called The Horror Nerd. How did the idea of The Horror Nerd come about?
Well, so at a previous job, my coworkers knew that I loved horror movies. And they said, well, why don't you have a website, you know, where you can talk about all that stuff? And I said, mainly because I'm lazy. But then they kind of pushed me into it, you know. So I started my website, horrornerd.net. And it's really just a personal website for me where I just post things that I like. I write articles about things that I like. I have no desire to compete with the big horror websites that are out there. Those are great. It's just a very personal thing for me, and I hope that, you know, I hope that people like it, but, you know, it's, I like to keep it small. I tend to kind of come and go. I'll update it a lot for a while, and then I'll neglect it for a while, which shame on me. But yeah, I wanted to just be able to get my thoughts out there of things that I like that are personal to me and to be able to talk about my own projects that I'm working on and things like that.
I wanted to bring you on to the podcast to talk about the upcoming 6th Annual Toy Drive and Scares That Care fundraiser. But first, tell everyone about Scares That Care.
Okay, so Scares That Care is a charity based in Maryland, founded by a guy named Joe Ripple, who wanted to show the world that the horror community is not just a bunch of scary people. It's about people that love creepy things and scary things, but that also enjoy helping people. So Scares That Care is a 100% volunteer charity. No one draws a salary. All the money that we raise goes directly to the people that we help. What we do is each year we nominate people that will be helped in the upcoming year. Typically, we choose someone who is fighting breast cancer, a child who has, you know, some sort of a grave illness. And then we'll also pick someone who is a survivor of burns, a burn victim. And we will raise money. And then during that year, each of those recipients will get a check for $10,000. And that's our goal every year. There's more, you know, there's more that goes on than just that. We help out in a lot of other ways. But that's the goal, to show the world that the horror community is not just about horror. We also care about our fellow humans, hence the name Scares That Care. And becoming involved with them is just one of the proudest things that I've ever done, and I'm just happy to be a part of it.
How did you become involved with Joe Ripple and the charity?
So a long time ago, a good friend of mine, Rob Dimension, started a group called the New Jersey Pennsylvania Horror Club. And we would meet in the back of a comic book store, and we would watch indie horror films and then talk about them. And that's where I met Andrew Valli, who was associated with the charity. And he mentioned it to me and thought it would be something that I might be interested in helping out with. And then Andrew started coming to my film festival. And through him, I met Joe Ripple and said, you know, what can I do? And he said, well, you can be a state rep for New Jersey and help us with our events and with fundraisers and such. And the rest, as they say, is history. I can't even remember how many years ago that was now that I met Andrew, but it's got to be, I don't know, 7 or 8 years, I think.
Now, you and Joe always try to outdo each other. Between Joe's bra war at Scares That Care weekend and your toy driving fundraiser, how did the event come about?
Okay, so now my event, so it really started, I run two film festivals per year called Grindhouse Nights Film Festival, but I wanted to do an event where we weren't really showing any movies, we weren't, you know, it wasn't an official event. I wanted to just get people together to hang out in the spirit of the holidays and raise some money for Scares That Care. We'd raffle off some prizes. We would have entertainers, you know, we'd collect tips, whatever. And we just, you know, just to have fun, enjoy the holidays. And then it just escalated from there. You know, every year it got bigger and bigger and bigger, and we would end up raising, you know, thousands of dollars and collecting hundreds of toys for needy children. And as part of it, I would just try to wear more and more outrageous outfits each event, you know, to just try to one-up Joe. And it just has become a friendly competition over the years to see who can wear the most outrageous and ridiculous outfit. I am always happy to make a fool out of myself to help raise money.
What makes you want to put on an event like this every year?
Well, so it's interesting. Because I love horror, people just sort of naturally assume that Halloween is my favorite holiday. It is not. Christmas has been and will always be my favorite holiday. It just holds so many childhood memories and family memories for me. I will always and forever be Father Christmas. So like I said, I wanted to just have an event around Christmas time where I can hang out with, you know, horror fans. And where I didn't really have to do a lot of work. Putting on a film festival is a lot of work. But the fundraiser is just is fun, you know. I wear a ridiculous outfit. I have some performers. We raise money. We collect toys. And it's just something fun to do around the holidays that allows me to help scares that care. And that's really it. It's just about, once again, proving that the horror community likes to take care of other people.
What are some other things that take place at these events, as this looks different from Scares That Care Weekend?
Well, so Scares That Care Weekend is very much a horror convention. We have guests that, you know, celebrity guests signing autographs. There are panels. There's a costume contest, a film festival. It's very, very much a horror convention. My fundraiser is just about getting together, hanging out. We just have fun. We have some food, some drinks. You know, we'll do some trivia contest. We'll raffle off some prizes. You know, again, it's just about raising money and especially collecting toys. Last year, we broke a record. We collected 178 individual gifts for needy children. So I was very, very proud of that. So it's really just about people gathering together and having fun without the formality, if you will, of a real horror convention.
How much planning goes into this event?
Well, so this year, there's a lot more planning involved. Usually, I don't want to minimize it, but it is a lot less planning than my usual film festival because I'm not showing any films. I don't have to watch, you know, and judge films and make decisions on which ones to show. There's no real setup as far as, you know, setting up a screen or anything like that. We just get together and we just hang out and we drink and we eat and we have fun. What really goes into it is me, like, deciding on which performers I'm going to have that particular year based on who's available, what kind of different things we're going to do, or if we're going to do a raffle to raffle off prizes, or what are we going to do? We're going to do trivia. What are we going to do this time? That's really it. It takes work to do it, but not nearly as much work as Joe puts in for Scares That Care Charity Weekend. I can't even comprehend that.
With the pandemic and everything, this year's event will be on the Horror Nerds YouTube channel. How hard was it planning this event compared to past years?
It's not really harder, Anthony. It's just different. You know, planning an in-person event, it's basically you kind of just open up the doors and people show up. For having a virtual event, it's all about getting the word out, you know, making people aware of it, giving them all the tools that they need. As you said, it's going to be live streaming to both my YouTube channel and my Facebook page. And I do just want to make a quick correction. The event is Friday, December 4th, starting at 5 p.m. On my YouTube channel and on my Facebook page. For this time, I have a lot more special guests coming on than I usually do with a live event, because I have to fill up 6 hours of live stream time. So that's where all the work was in, reaching out to my friends in the industry, inviting them to come on, coming up with the schedule, et cetera, et cetera. It's a lot of tiny details, let's put it that way.
Sorry about that. I just missed something when I was planning it.
Oh, no worries, man, no worries. It's all good.
Who are some of the guests that are slated to be at this event?
We have a pretty cool lineup of different people. I have two of my good friends, Nola Bunny and Vivi Noir, will be doing burlesque performances, which has kind of become a highlight of my shows. People come to expect it. A good friend of mine, Tom Kanak, is a singer-songwriter. He will be performing. Another very good friend of mine who regularly performs at my event, opera singer Nicole Oliva, will be singing a few songs for us. I have several authors coming on. Brian Keene, who helps run Scares That Care Charity Weekend, will be coming on to talk about his books and to talk about the charity. Phyllisa Rose, the star of Sleepaway Camp, we'll be dropping in to hang out for a while and raffle off a few signed photos to help us raise some money. And then we have a bunch of other guests that I'm currently working on. I don't want to say anything until they've been confirmed. But hopefully within the next few days or so, I'll have the guest list complete and I'll be able to post a complete guest list.
Will this be available on demand after the event?
Yes, it'll stay on my YouTube channel so that people can, you know, watch it whenever they want. So I'm a little bit new to YouTube live streaming, but I've talked to a bunch of people who have assured me that the video will be recorded by YouTube and it will stay on my channel. So yeah, it will always be available.
How will people be able to donate a toy to this toy drive on December 4th?
So there's a ton of ways. And, you know, like I said to you earlier, COVID really has screwed everything up. But there's always a way. So people can drop off the toys, new unwrapped toys, at our usual location for the event, which is Cafe Z in Union, New Jersey. They can also drop off their toys at my house, and they can, you know, go to my website and send me a message, and I'll provide them with my address. Or we have an ever-growing Amazon wish list that people can order toys from, and those toys will be drop-shipped directly to my house. So there's a bunch of ways to do it. If people go to my website, horrornerd.net, and just click on the giant image of the toy drive, there's an entire section there that tells people exactly how they can contribute.
And if they want to give money to Skiz That Care?
People can go any time of year to scaresthatcare.org, and there's a donate button there to donate directly to the charity. Anytime. The day of the event, I'll have a scroll going on the live feed reminding people where they can go to donate. But again, on my webpage, horrornerd.net, click on the image and you'll see a halfway down on the page, there'll be a big donate here button. People click there, they can donate. And also the day after Thanksgiving, I'll be setting up my usual Facebook Facebook fundraiser where people can donate. So there's going to be a ton of ways people can donate to this event.
You're also the state representative for New Jersey for Skiz That Care. How did you become a state rep?
Basically I just volunteered, you know, but even before I was officially a state rep, you know, I had always been involved with the charity, you know, doing the toy drive and, you know, just helping promote the Skiz That Care charity weekend and all of that. And I never even realized that I messaged Joe Ripple one day and I said, so how do I become an actual official state rep? You know? And he wrote back and said, well, what are you talking about? You already are one. I'm like, okay. He's like, well, you are from New Jersey and you represent Skiz That Care. Therefore, you are a state rep. And I'm like, oh, well, how about that? And that, there we go.
What if anybody wants to become a state rep for Skiz That Care?
Huh. You know, that is an excellent, excellent question. And I wish I had an answer for you. But what I would recommend is go to scaresthatcare.org and there is a contact us feature and people can get in touch with Joe there. They can also feel free to reach out to me. I'm all over Facebook. I'm a social media whore. I am not that hard to find. People can reach out to me directly if they want to get involved, or they can go to the Skiz That Care Facebook page and just join there and introduce themselves and just ask how they can get involved.
Where can they find more information on the upcoming event on December 4th?
So there's two main ways. The easiest way is, again, go to www.horrornerd.net. And right on the homepage, you'll see the giant graphic for the event. Just click on that picture, and it will take you to a page where every detail of the event is there. You can subscribe to my YouTube channel from there. You can connect to my Horror Nerd Facebook page from there. And it's literally got all the information you could possibly need for the event. You can also just follow me on Facebook. Again, you can find me under my real name, Todd Staruch. You can follow me there, or you can go to The Horror Nerd, my fan page, and I'm constantly posting updates there. So yeah, it's pretty easy to get the lowdown.
How can people find more information on Scares That Care?
Go to scaresthatcare.org. That's the main webpage for the charity, and you know, all the links and all the information is there. There's also a Scares That Care Facebook page that is the social media home for Scares That Care. And then there's a Scares That Care Charity Weekend Williamsburg Facebook group where people can go to join to keep up on all the information on the actual convention.
Todd, I want to thank you again for coming onto my podcast.
Anytime, my friend. It's always a great time. I appreciate everything you do for the horror community, and I'm very grateful that you had me on again.
Have a good day and stay safe.
You too, my friend.
Every day, there's a family struggling with hospital bills to care for their sick child who is fighting an illness. There's a woman who is fighting breast cancer and is having trouble making ends meet while paying for their treatment. And there are burn victims that are going through treatments to heal their deep wounds. There is a charity in the horror community that helps these people. Scares That Care is an organization that helps families deal with the bills for their child. They help women get the treatment they need to fight breast cancer, and they help people who are dealing with severe burns get the help they need to heal. Scares That Care is a 100% volunteer organization and 501c3 nonprofit charity that is dedicated to helping these people in fighting real monsters. To find out more information or to donate to Scares That Care, you can go to www.scaresthatcare.org. Every donation helps Scares That Care fight real monsters.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
This is Carrie. Yeah.
This is Billy.
This is Mr. Bo.
And we are from A Podcast From Beneath. You can catch us every Wednesday wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
Welcome back to Anthony T's Horror Show. I am here with the founder and president of Fright Rags, Benjamin Scrivens. How are you doing today?
Good. Yeah, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
How did you first discover the horror genre?
I saw Halloween on October 30th, 1981. I was 4 years old. So that was my first introduction. It was just on TV, and we were at a family friend's house, and I was bored, and my parents basically told me to go watch TV, and I went over and turned it on, and that movie came on, and I had never seen anything like that before. And just since then, I've always loved horror movies. I mean, you know, it's not like I went and started seeing everything I could, but I mean, I just wanted to see more of that type of thing. It just amazed me at the time. So from then on, I've always had the love of the genre.
What are some of your favorite films?
I mean, Halloween is absolutely still my favorite film of all time, horror or non-horror. But in terms of other horror movies, I mean, it's a lot of the classics. I mean, Night of the Living Dead, Evil Dead, Texas Chainsaw, obviously. But some of the other ones that I like, you know, Silver Bullet has always been one of my favorite movies. Even Trick or Treat, which is obviously a little bit more recent, but that's up there with one of my favorites. Of course, you know, Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street. I mean, I've always been more of a slasher guy. I mean, I love, you know, zombie films and giallo films and things like that, but I tend to gravitate towards slashers. Like, I love Slumber Party Massacre and just anything, you know, like The Burning, you know, like I'll just eat it up if it's somebody in a mask killing people.
Besides being the founder and president of Fright Rags, you're also a graphic designer. What made you want to get into that field?
Actually, you know, I've always been sort of creative and I guess artistic my whole life. I've always liked drawing and things, and I never knew what graphic design was, I guess. I mean, I knew kind of what it was, but I just never really knew about it as a career. And I learned a little bit about it more in high school, and back then, pre sort of computer manipulation in terms of like Photoshop and InDesign or even Quark, which is all these layout programs and things, we had to do everything by hand. And that was hard for me because as detailed as I can be, I can also be very sloppy in some other ways. So it was always like, oh, I don't know if I want to do this. But when I discovered designing in Photoshop and making logos and like the actual user design, you know, as we got into the internet age and websites started popping up, I found that it was an interesting blend of psychology and sociology. And basically, I guess in some ways, you know, manipulating information and imagery to create something that people liked, you know, like they would see it and it was visually appealing, but you could articulate why it was visually appealing. It wasn't just like, oh, I like that logo and that's fine, but why? And then you start realizing, oh, it's because blue is a soothing color and it's because these, you know, I really liked those elements to it. So that's kind of why I started getting into it even more and then took it in college.
What made you want to translate your love for horror and graphic design into the horror merchandising business?
It was really just this blend of wanting to be creative. I mean, this was back in 2003. And I was working at a job that I liked, but I was, you know, I had some free time and I was a little kind of bored. And also I would spend a lot of time on horror websites or message boards, specifically message boards with people that made replicas, like a replica Freddy glove or a Jason mask, or of course, you know, my favorite Michael Myers mask. And I thought, wow, that's just so cool that people are using this creativity to make things in horror movies that I love. And I thought, what can I do? And I've always sort of been interested in quirky t-shirts. And so I was like, well, I don't really own any horror t-shirts. Why not? And I kind of looked some up online and I didn't see anything that really spoke to me. So I thought, well, I know how to design and I have a little bit of a screen printing background. So at least I understand a bit of the process. So I just thought, why not just make some horror t-shirts?
Were there any other reasons to why you also wanted to stop Fright Rags?
I mean, it was really to connect with people. I mean, I was such a fan of the genre, and I thought if I could just make something cool. And so basically, when I started designing my own stuff under the permission, with permission from a friend of mine who owned one of the bigger forums at the time that I was a part of, you know, I posted my designs, and when people gave me positive feedback, like, oh, I'd wear that on a t-shirt, it was really one of the first times in my life that I had the potential to create something that someone liked enough to maybe to pay for and then wear it. And that just was such a trip. So to me, it was like, that was so cool. I never thought of it as a way to make money, like, oh, I was going to make this my career. I mean, I always wanted that, but I never knew that was going to actually happen. I was just in love with the idea of making something that other people liked and wanted to buy.
What made you want to set your base of operations in Rochester, New York, compared to a big city?
Well, I mean, this is where I was born and raised. And so I grew up here. And I'm, you know, where I'm at right now, I'm in my house right now, but I'm, you know, 2 miles away from where I grew up. So I, you know, my wife and I, we decided to stay here because our family is here and we, you know, she grew up here as well. So I never, you know, with the internet, the great thing about the internet is I didn't have to go to LA or New York or any other big city because we're online only. So I can service we can service the entire world right from Rochester, and that's awesome because we ship worldwide, and knowing that I can still be around my family and be in the town that I grew up with. I mean, it's great to be driving by or riding my bike by the places that I saw this one movie for the first time, or rented all my movies as a kid. Like there's still a nice connection to that in my childhood.
On the Wikipedia page, when I was doing research, I found out that you put $600 of your own money for the first run of Fright Rag shirts. What made you want to do that?
Well, it was a leap of faith. You know, I posted a couple designs on my friend's forum, and, you know, people were saying that they expressed interest in wearing them as a t-shirt. And the only way I figured out I could do that is like, I need to just buy a bunch of t-shirts and make them available for sale. So at the time, this was the only time I had done this, but my very first order was done on a website called customink.com, And, you know, it was only, they were really basic shirts, but it was still very pricey. It was like 10 bucks a shirt. And so I was like, well, let's order 20 of each design. So, you know, 600 bucks later. And I remember sitting there like, oh my God, it was on my credit card. It wasn't money that I actually had. I'd have to pay it back because it was on my credit card. I didn't know if I could, you know, I didn't know if I was going to sell anything. So I'd never been in business before. I didn't know anything about business. So I just thought, well, I'm just going to try this out. I'd made my own website. I need to have a way for people to buy these things. So I just clicked buy now and check out and got the shirts and started there.
Was the success of that $600 made you want to expand Fright Rags into a business?
Yeah, it happened really slowly. You know, I mean, I did that first run and people were ordering them, and, you know, the money that I made, it's not like I went out and just spent it. You know, I just kept it in a separate account because I knew ultimately I wanted to do more. So I was like, oh, well, I can reprint this one design or I can make new designs. And at the time I found a printer that was right around the corner from my job at the time. He was working out of his house and he actually printed all of our shirts from that moment after that first order up until I think 2008. So the first 5 years, excuse me. And so he was able to work with me on pricing and ideas and things. So it was really the love of the creativity. So I just kept putting the money back into more t-shirts or more designs or more ideas. Listen, there'd be like weeks sometimes where I wouldn't get one order and, you know, and I'd be out there, you know, posting on forums or doing whatever. And it just took a lot of time to build. But during that time, I was just so happy to be working on something that somebody liked somewhere.
What made you decide to start selling or licensing horror properties for your business?
Well, in the beginning, you know, I'd started out, I knew that I was, you know, repurposing characters, popular characters such as Michael Myers and Jason and things. I knew that doing that without officially licensing them was, I could get caught and I could potentially get fined or sued or whatever. I knew that that was a liability, and I knew that was something that if I was going to continue doing this, I'd have to work in somehow to get licensing. But it's like a chicken and egg thing. I think, you know, I was way too small. I did not have the money to get into licensing. I did not have the know-how or any of this experience or knowledge. But so I just kept doing things unlicensed until, I mean, to be fair, I mean, my first license was like within 2 months of me starting up. And that was a very small license, Sleepaway Camp 2 and 3, which were some of my favorite movies anyway. But it was very uncomplicated. It was a very simple license to get because other companies can just get, you know, 20-page contracts, things like that. So in the beginning, I always knew I wanted to license, and I always reached out to companies because, again, you don't know what you don't know. So I would just reach out and see what they could do. But it took several years before I started getting, you know, another license that was a little bit bigger and then a little bit bigger than that. And it just this process of kind of chipping away at it. And as soon as we had a few under our belt, we could get bigger ones. And as soon as we had those ones, we could get even bigger ones until, you know, we were able to work with all the properties for the most part that we've ever wanted to. And I just knew that ultimately that was going to be the way forward if I wanted to be successful.
Now, what is the process in getting a license for something like Sleepaway Camp or Halloween?
So, again, it's first of all, it's just finding who owns the movie. And that can be a studio or it can be a person. Like in the case of Sleepaway Camp 2 and 3, it was just a person. And I forgot how I got in touch with them, but it was a very simple email back and forth contract. And that was it. With something like Halloween or, you know, like say like Jaws, for example, which is owned by Universal Studios, that's a much more detailed process. I mean, you find a contact, you try to, you know, first of all, get them to reply to you. Sometimes it takes a long time. And then they're going to want you to send a proposal, and that proposal will include how long you want the contract, which is generally about 2 years. The royalty rate you're willing to give them per item you sell, and an advance against that royalty. So you have to pay money up front, and that can range from, you know, again, depending on the property, it can range from nothing down to thousands and thousands of dollars up front before you even make one product. And there's a lot of, you know, again, some, especially with a company like Universal, there's a lot of red tape. There's a lot of, things you have to go through. I mean, these contracts are 20, 30 pages long, and there's a lot of back and forth. And then once you get the deal, it doesn't mean you can do anything you want. You know, things still have to get approved by them, and there's usually some strict processes for that. And you can't even, a lot of times, use people's likenesses. Again, depends on the movie. With Halloween, we can, but with something like Jaws, we can't. We can't use anybody's face unless we get permission from that person or their estate. So every film is different. Every company is different.
Which studios are the easiest to deal with?
Right now, I mean, we have great relationships with pretty much everybody we work with, because most of the studios we've been working with now, we've actually had relationships for many years. So we've gotten very comfortable, and we know the people there, and you develop relationships sort of with them. You know, we're very fortunate, especially, I mean, and if to be a little biased, because it is my favorite movie, but you know, like a movie like Halloween, we're very fortunate to be working with directly with the studio. The nice thing about that is, like any other situation, if I had an idea for a product, but it's not on our license, like we didn't ask for that category, there's a lot of back and forth to be able to add that category to our license. Whereas other properties, we can kind of just talk to them and say, hey, would you mind us if we did this item? And they'd be like, oh yeah, go for it. And it's just so much easier. I mean, they still have to approve it, but just the ability to have an idea and approach some of these companies and have them say, yeah, go ahead and try it, is great, because then we can test the market.
Has there been a property that you've loved to get your hands on but haven't yet?
Yes. So basically, the one major studio we've been trying to get into is Warner Brothers, because they own many things. Among them, obviously, popular ones are Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street. So those two I would love to work with on an official basis. But they also have, you know, The Shining, Beetlejuice, Gremlins. And there's a bunch of things they have that I would love to. And we've talked to them on many occasions over the last several years. And they're just their business model is just a little bit different. So it just hasn't been the right timing and opportunity yet. But we're hoping that changes eventually, so we can work with them.
What have been some of your best-selling properties?
Halloween does great. The original film, anything Halloween-related always seems to do well, and we're very happy with that because it's classic. Jaws, as I mentioned earlier, that actually is a really good one. Elvira is a great property to work with. She's awesome, and I'm glad that something like, you know, she's been around a long time, but she is just as popular as ever, which is really cool. I'll tell you one thing that's been a great relationship and seller for us over the last few years is Joe Bob Briggs, who hosts The Last Drive-In on Shudder. We befriended him before that because I was always a fan of Monster Vision growing up, and we were able to do some Monster Vision shirts and some shirts based on him even before The Last Drive-In came out. And then he had this humongous resurgence with Shudder's Last Drive-In, which is amazing. And we were able to work with him on doing merchandise, and we've expanded that merchandise into action figures and things like that. And I tell you, people just love it. And I'm so grateful because I've always loved Joe Bob, and it's just great to see him having this renaissance later in his career.
How did the deal with Joe Bob Briggs come about?
So it's funny. I always have this list of like ongoing like ideas that I'd like to do. And Monster Vision was always on that list. And one of our main artists, Justin Osborne, reached out to me once, and we always have him working on something. And he's like, hey, have you ever thought about doing a Monster Vision shirt? And I was like, dude, like I would love to. And so I was trying to find his contact, Joe Bob's, because we wanted to bring him out to Rochester. We do a, pre-COVID, I guess, we would do a monthly screening we call Saturday Night Rewind, where we show a cult classic film, usually horror, and on film usually when we can, and have, you know, just one night a month. And it was just a lot of fun at this local theater. And we would try to get people to Skype in interviews or come here in person. And I wanted to build a Monster Vision set. So like the replica of his trailer and the TV and the lawn chair and everything, and have him do an intro for a movie, Monster Vision style, and then we would show the movie. And so he ended up coming out here to do The Warriors. This was October of 2016. So we had him out here for a weekend, and that's when we debuted our Monster Vision shirts and things. So that's really kind of the beginning of our relationship working together, because we had him come out here to do that and did the Monster Vision shirts at the same time. So we've been working with him ever since.
One of the things that you've been doing lately is selling out of limited runs of Joe Bob Briggs action figures. What made you want to get into action figures?
It was kind of a happenstance between a friend of mine who used to work for a couple of the action figure companies, Mattel and a couple other companies. And it's sort of a long story short. I had met his girlfriend out in LA when I was there, a few years ago having some meetings and things. And she's like, "Oh, my boyfriend grew up near you. He grew up in a town called Newark. That's about 45 minutes away from Rochester." And I was like, "Oh, that's interesting." And then he contacted me separately. He goes, "Oh, I think, you know, my girlfriend, she works at Live Nation," because we were talking to them about licensing. I'm like, "Oh, yeah." So anyway, over the course of, you know, and he was actually back here, to visit his family. This was over the holidays. This is, I think, 2 years ago, 3 years ago. And we had dinner to finally meet in person. And we were talking, and he's like, "Listen, I'm starting up my own company. Would you want to work together?" And I said, "Yeah, what are you doing? You know, cause he was doing action figures. I'm like, "What kind of figures?" And we talked about it, and we thought about some ideas that we could work on together. And, you know, again, going back to how easy it is to add things to licenses, you know, Joe Bob, we work with him directly. So it's like, hey, maybe there's an option to do a Joe Bob figure. No one's ever done it. We would be, you know, we could do it. I can talk to him and his manager, and that shouldn't be a problem. And we did, and they were up for it. So that just seemed like a good one to start out with. Now, I did not anticipate the demand. And that's, you know, the blue shirt figure that we released, we had committed to 1,000. Again, because we can't just hold thousands in inventory. I mean, it's a lot of money tied up. It's a lot of space. We just can't order thousands and thousands of these things and hope they sell. You know, it's just not, it's not what we can do. So, you know, we committed to 1,000 knowing that, okay, maybe that we'll sell through these and it'll be a good test. Well, 1,000 of them sold out within 40 minutes. So we knew we had to redo it, but we also knew that people were buying it because it was limited edition. So we just changed the color of a shirt to a red shirt and opened it up for a longer pre-order period where we could add on to our existing order, and we were able to sell a bunch more. And then we just recently, quietly, sort of surprisingly announced the Halloween version that was a limited run on the Halloween Hideaway. So it was, it's been fun, and we've got more in the works. You know, we're working on Darcy for next year. A lot of people are asking for Darcy. Well, that's in the works, and that will be out next year. And we're also working on them for some other properties too.
So there are plans for other properties besides The Last Drive-In in the future in regards to action figures.
Yes, and it's too early to say what now, but I can say that we've got several planned. If it all goes well, several are planned for 2021 that I am super excited about. Again, for those I can't go into detail, but I can say that for me personally, it's like, I'm excited for them, so I'm really hoping other people are as well.
Now, back to the shirts. Explain how one of the shirts gets made from start to completion.
So, generally, when we have a license, you know, we have a few artists that we work with kind of exclusively. So, Justin, who I mentioned before, is sort of a flagship art of ours that we know, like, usually when we get especially a bigger property, we want him to do his thing with it. But we also work with Kyle Crawford and a few other people. So we'll sit around and kind of think about what makes sense to do for this property. So I guess I'll just use Jaws again for an example. You know, we're like, okay, we can't use people's faces, and we can use this art, and we can do this. So sometimes we'll just go to the artist and say, hey, here's what you can and can't do. Come up with some concepts, and they'll come back to us. And if we like them and we think they're in within the parameters of the license, we'll send it to the studio and see if they approve it. And then we can continue on to the final stages, whether it's the next stage usually is then the colors and then the final design. And we have to go through a lot of stages of approvals. In some cases, again, the easier ones, we can show them a final piece if we know we're not doing anything that is not within the parameters of license, and we should be good to go. Once it gets approved by the rights holder, then we can go into production. And many times we do print these ahead of time because we want to be able to ship them, you know, right when they're released. You know, we've run into some issues recently because things either sell out or just in higher demand. So we have to end up having to put on pre-order, but we send the artwork to our printer, and then our printer actually separates. They have to separate each color out of the design. So what you might see as a fully painted piece has to actually separate out into individual colors, and especially from our more complex ones, that can end up being 12 to 14 individual colors that are being printed, and they have to make a screen for each one of those and match those colors up. And so we get a digital proof that we sign off on, okay, it's going to look like this, and then they can run it on press, and then we get the shirts. And our printer is 2 miles down the road from us. We work very closely with them. If there's any issues or anything we need to check on, I'll just go down there and go on press and see what they look like. And they'll tweak the colors right there for me, and we can kind of go back and forth. And then if I sign off on the right one, then they'll just go ahead with that. And then we get the shirts and put them up for sale.
How long does it take to make an average shirt?
It depends on the approval process. I mean, if we... And the artist, I mean, there are times where an art might take 2 weeks, approval might take another 2 weeks, and then we can get it printed in 2 weeks. So that's like, 6 weeks from initial concept to final design. And that's, I mean, that varies. I mean, there are some times where we're waiting for approvals for a month or two. Sometimes the artist comes up with a concept and a final design. It gets approved that day, and we're sitting on it for a little while because we haven't scheduled the release for a month. Cause we schedule as far in advance as we can. I mean, I've got almost all of 2021 planned right now. I mean, at least for the most part, idea wise. And then, you know, the first 3 months we've got nailed down a little bit more than say the second quarter or third quarter, and things always move around. I mean, we can have everything nailed down on our end, but we might end up being late on approvals, or something might happen, and things that are out of our control, then we have to be flexible enough to move things around, which we do all the time. I mean, I can literally on my end plan everything out because of the licenses we have and the artists we want to use. I can schedule everything and then end up having to change it. But so we can get something done really quick, or sometimes it just takes a long time, but usually it's because it's out of our control.
Have Fright Rags shirts appeared at other stores?
Yes. So we've worked with Hot Topic. I worked with early on. They sold a few of our designs, and that kind of cooled off for a while. But in recent years, we've sold to Hot Topic and Box Lunch. We've actually had a few shirts this year in Spencer's. Even with COVID, we've been selling really good, a couple of our designs, and we've been in talks with doing more for Hot Topic and Spencer's for next year. Those are our two biggest wholesale in terms of, you know, biggest exposure. Everybody else, we don't do a lot of wholesale. I mean, in fact, we do very, very little wholesale, and we like it that way. We like doing it direct to consumer. There are some mom and pop shops. There's a few shops like in Salem, Massachusetts, and in LA that carry some of our stuff, but we don't actively solicit those too much because we are very busy with what we have going on. And it can be hard to manage. We're a small team. We're only 8 people. We're just not a huge, huge operation where we can manage all these things. With things like Spencer's and Hot Topic, we work with a third party company that can do a lot of the heavy work. So we're not printing in full, because with those companies, you have to not only print it, but you have to fold it, put the size tags on it, put the price stickers on it. You have to box them in a certain way. I mean, there's a huge process you have to go through. There's no way we could do that. So we work with another printer that can handle all that for us because we just don't have the bandwidth. In fact, some of the things we've been doing recently, like the action figures and other things, we've had to have our t-shirt printer help fulfillment. I've had my parents. I mean, I've filled up my van several times to bring orders and product over to my parents to fill these Joe Bob figure orders because we don't have the bandwidth or the space or the people to do it.
Besides shirts, I also found on your site that you sell trading cards. How did that happen, as I've seen trading cards for such properties as Child's Play and Night of the Living Dead on your site?
Yeah, so again, a lot of these ideas come about when we're kind of just talking amongst ourselves internally as a, you know, just as a company. And I'll see something, and, you know, as a, for example, for the trading cards, I grew up loving trading cards, but I wasn't a sports fan, so I didn't collect baseball cards, but I liked the Fright Flicks cards, and I like, of course, Garbage Pail Kids and Mars Attacks and any other movie cards I could get my hands on, like Jaws or Dick Tracy or something. And so I was thinking one day, and we were probably just talking, and I was like, you know, no one's ever done trading cards for Evil Dead or Halloween or Night of the Living Dead. Or I take that back. People have done them for Night of the Living Dead. But my point was, I wanted them to be the old school cards. So part of what started the idea was I found literally the one person in the country that could do these wax wrappers like they used to be in this, you know, 60s, 70s, 80s. Because now everything is, you know, that kind of foil wrap and it's all really high quality cards and all this stuff. I wanted to go old school. I wanted to have that cardboard back. You know, everything, I wanted the gum too, but unfortunately, FDA prevents you from putting the gum in these things now. But, I wanted it to look and feel like it came out when the movie came out. So like Halloween, I want these things to look and feel like they came out in 1978. I want that flexo printing on the wrappers where it's not completely lined up. I wanted, you know, I just wanted them to ooze authenticity, and that's what we've strived to create. I didn't want to do just trading cards. I didn't want to just make trading cards. I wanted to make vintage style wax wrap trading cards because I just felt that would just be so cool. And luckily they've been received really well. I've been really thrilled with, and the thing is, trading cards are very complex to do. There's a lot of things I had to learn. And of course, there's a lot of issues with licensing and, again, using images from the movie and likenesses. So unfortunately, we are not able to do all of the ones that I've always wanted to do in terms of, you know, there's some properties where it's just impossible. There's just no way we could do it because we're not allowed to. But we've been able to do them for amazing properties like, again, Halloween, Night of the Living Dead, and Evil Dead, Chucky. We've got more coming too. So we definitely are able to work on some great, great properties, and we've got a couple awesome ones coming up.
Besides trading cards, Fright Rags also sells posters, pins, hats, lounge pants, and socks. What made you decide to branch out besides shirts?
Well, I think, you know, I used to think, you know, you can only have so many shirts, although I see some of our customers, they have like literally over 100 of our shirts. But, you know, as again, it's funny to say, I'm not only the president, but I'm a user of our products, right? So as much as I love t-shirts, you know, when people come home from work, they just want to relax. So they end up getting into their comfy pants. Well, why not get into some comfy horror pants? So my wife had bought me some these lounge pants several years ago that I legitimately were the most comfy pants that I've ever worn. They're just these amazing that I would just want to wear them all the time. And I thought, well, I would love to wear these with like Halloween on them or House of Thousand Corpses or something. So I found a company that could do it. Socks, same thing. Like there's a lot of people that can't wear our t-shirts out in public, you know, at their job or whatever. I've seen people like in like security or police officer uniforms where obviously they can't wear a Teen Wolf shirt or whatever, but they can wear socks because they're covered up. So they can still show their love of movies and the genre in other ways. So it's really just taking what we like and seeing if there's a way we can express it, express the genre into these other items and categories that make sense. And again, I always want it to make sense. Like, I don't want to get into something just to get into it. I want to kind of see a bigger picture and be like, oh yeah, I can totally understand how that could fit.
You also do conventions, right?
Yeah, before COVID, we would do conventions about 4 times a year.
Now, what conventions would you usually go to?
So Monster Mania in Cherry Hill, New Jersey is definitely the one we hit up the most. I mean, that's twice a year. That's generally in March and August. And then we do Horror Hound in Cincinnati in March. We were going to attend Texas Frightmare this year, obviously. COVID had other ideas, and we are slated to do it next year. Obviously, we'll see what happens. And so those are the ones that we frequent. I mean, we did the Halloween 40th anniversary a few years ago, which was amazing. That was in LA. We do what we can. Again, you know, we're being this smaller crew that we are and generally pretty busy. It is hard for us to take the time out because we have to drive, you know, to wherever we're going usually, which takes, you know, some time, an extra day or two. But we love being out and seeing our friends and seeing customers and stuff. So it's great to do when we can do it. But unfortunately, sometimes time just doesn't allow us to get out to many more.
What products does Fright Rags have upcoming in the future?
Well, we've got some new things in the works. You know, we had just done a Halloween lunchbox, which sold really well. So we've got a couple other lunchboxes in the works for next year. We've got more action figures and even these Nanoforce little army men we did. We've got another one in the works for that. More, you know, sooner we've got another collection for Silent Night, Deadly Night coming up. That'll be coming up on Black Friday. That will basically be our last release of the year because we've got a big sale coming up. And generally, Black Friday orders tend to take us a while to get through. We are usually pretty slammed. So we want to just, you know, make sure that we've got the time to fill them. So we decided to have everything kind of come out on Black Friday. But we've got a really cool Silent Night, Deadly Night sweater coming out. It's like a full-on, like, ugly sweater. It's not like a sweatshirt with print on it. Like, it's a full-on custom sweater that we're doing, which I'm pretty excited about.
Is the Black Friday sale that's upcoming the only sale you do all year?
No, we generally do other sales. This year, we did not have a chance to do any other sales because, honestly, this year has been, I mean, again, going, it's been an anomaly for everybody in many ways, but we didn't know what to expect when COVID sort of started shutting things down in March. And, you know, we weren't sure with this pandemic what was going to happen to our business. We were all worried that maybe, you know, during a pandemic, people just aren't going to want to buy horror t-shirts and merchandise. What we found very quickly after things started happening in mid-March is that was not the case. In fact, it exploded our business to a point where we could not handle the volume of orders that we've been receiving. In fact, September and October were our biggest months ever as a company. And, you know, we're up a very large percentage from where we were last year. And, you know, last year was a great year. So to do sales, our normally planned sales throughout this year, just wasn't an option because we couldn't keep up with what we were doing to begin with. And again, you know, you just end up starting to hit a wall and we're just getting so backed up. So this year though, or, you know, for sales, Black Friday obviously is going to be a big sale. And then we generally do post Christmas, like December 26th through the end of the year, because we shut down between Christmas and New Year's anyway. This year we're doing a full 2 weeks because we need it. We need a reset for next year because it's been a crazy year. So we'll do a sale in between Christmas and New Year's. Well, when we get back, you know, we'll fill those orders, but those will be the two biggest sales this year.
Where can they find you in Fright Rags on social media?
Well, you can on Instagram and Twitter, it's just one word, Fright Rags. On Facebook, it's just facebook.com/FrightRags. And, of course, our website is FrightRags.com, but that is Fright-Rags.com.
Benjamin, I want to thank you for coming on to the podcast.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
Have a good day and stay safe.
Thanks, you too.
Don't forget, you can find Anthony T's Horror Show on social media, over on Facebook, Instagram, and Slasher app at Anthony T's Horror Show, on Twitter at Anthony T's Horror. If you liked this episode, you can subscribe to Anthony T's Horror Show over on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher. You can also catch Anthony T's Horror Show over on DocDiscussions.com, where you can find my podcast and other podcasts on the Doc Discussions Network. What's Anthony T watching this time around? A Thanksgiving horror film. That's right. Since Thanksgiving is about here, yours truly has decided to review a Thanksgiving horror film. And no, it's not the Thanksgiving films. I've heard about the Thanksgiving films, but I'm not going to review that because, well, those films really look so stupid. And the fact that I'll never probably get Eli Roth's Thanksgiving as a full-length feature film. Now, if you don't know what I'm talking about, Eli Roth's Thanksgiving, it's a fake trailer from the film Grindhouse. That is like the ultimate Thanksgiving horror film that I want to be made. But it looks like that's probably never going to happen since it's been a while since Grindhouse was released. So I'm really not counting on that film ever being made. So what we are left with, a new horror film, a film called The Last Thanksgiving. It's the latest release from Scream Team Releasing. And yes, before I get any complaints, why am I highlighting Scream Team Releasing again? Is because I love this label a lot. And the fact that it was the only Thanksgiving film I could find, literally, that was new. As I'm trying to see as many horror films as I can before December 31st. And I have to say, The Last Thanksgiving was a good horror film. I was surprised that this was a good horror film. I really didn't think I was going to enjoy this film. The reason I thought that way, because it was on Thanksgiving. And how many Thanksgiving slasher films have I ever seen? Zero. Zero. I am not into Thanksgiving horror. I'm sorry. It's just not many Thanksgiving horror films. But I really enjoyed this film a lot. One of the main reasons why I enjoyed it was Eric Lorenc's direction and screenwriting. One of the things that I think he does very well with this film is to really give you characters to care about. Sometimes slasher films don't give you characters to care about. This film does, even though the lead character may come off as unlikable at times, but at the end of the day, I really think the character comes off as likable. And the reason for that was Lorenz's writing, because I really thought he did a great job really creating a strong lead character in the film, as I was not annoyed, even though I could have been annoyed with this character. I wasn't. It was definitely a credit to the way Lorenz wrote the screenplay, as I really think that character could have been annoying enough to the point that it would have really turned me off this film, but it didn't. And that's sometimes a credit to good screenwriting. Because seriously, you can have annoying characters, but if you write them in a way where the character on paper can be likable, then it makes you interested in the character. And that definitely is a tough feat to pull off, because usually I don't like annoying characters who act annoying all the time. But the way Lorenz wrote the screenplay and the lead character for the film, he does a very good job making sure it doesn't get to the point where you don't dislike the main character. And that's why I liked it a lot. The other thing that really makes this film good was the acting. I like how Lorenc does a very good job making sure he gets the performances that he really needs in this film. And so I thought the cast was very good. He does a very good job in making sure that this chemistry between each of the members of the cast. Linnea Quigley was good in this film. I have to admit, she was good. She came there and really did a good job with her role in the film. Even though it's very limited, but you had a sense that she was in the film and was important. I also thought the performance from Samantha Ferrand was very good, as I really think she really helped this film be as good as it is. Because literally, the character of Lisa Marie Taft is an annoying character, but she plays the character so well that you're into the character. And it's kind of one of those yes, the character can be annoying, but it's also entertaining at the same time. It's not, like, annoying to the point that you want to turn this film off and never want to see it again. She really makes sure that the character stands out, and it's definitely needed for the film to succeed. And she does a great job making sure that the character works. The film also has some very gory effects. In fact, this film could have even been more gorier if it wasn't for the limitations that this film had with its budget. It has some really good effects, including one towards the end of the film, which really was, I think, the best effect out of the whole film. So this is definitely a film to check out. As the last Thanksgiving really gave me vibes of like Halloween, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, those kinds of films. So definitely check out The Last Thanksgiving. It's a very entertaining Thanksgiving horror film. And it's pretty much, I think, my first Thanksgiving horror film that I've seen, to my knowledge. As there's not many of those. But I will be definitely watching The Last Thanksgiving next Thanksgiving. As it has a great lead performance, plus a good direction and screenplay from Eric Lorenk. So definitely check out The Last Thanksgiving, as is available on DVD and Blu-ray from Scream Team Releasing. Coming up on episode 55, which is also serving as the last episode of 2020, because, well, I want to get to all these 2020 films before December 31st, so it can qualify for the best of 2020 episode, which will be the second episode in January, because the first episode is the Horror Show Awards, and this is the third year that I will be doing the Anthony T. Horror Show Awards and the Horror Whammies, as these two episodes are usually the most difficult episodes. Those will be episodes 56 and 57. If nothing comes up during that period. Because something could come up where I might say, hey, this is a great interview. Why don't I do another podcast? So, most likely, episode 55 will be the last episode of 2020. Unless something comes up that I need to do. If there's an interview that I want to do, I will have another episode. So, right now, plan episode 55 to be the last episode 2020. But never say never, because I could do episode 56 this year, too. I won't know certain until next episode. Next episode, I already have one interview conducted for episode 55. As I'll be talking to the writer, director, and cast of the film Social Distance. Joining me on that interview are Brian Basuglia, actors Jed Rowan, Casey Brown, and actress Tasha Takosa. And I'm quite possibly working on another multi-person interview. Don't want to jinx that one, but once that's done, I'll break it to you on Anthony T. Sauer Show on Facebook, Instagram, and the Slasher app. If you had a fun time listening to this podcast, do not forget to subscribe to Anthony T.'s Horror Show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher. With that, I want to thank you for listening to Anthony T.'s Horror Show. Have a good day, stay safe, and support indie horror.